I think it's over to you, Simon.
Excellent. Hello, welcome to Crave. This is the podcast dedicated to all manner of entertainment. Mostly, it has to be said, music and film, but actually anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And we're starting this week with a sequel that's been 14, that's 1-4, it's a long time, 14 whole years in the making. But after all that, was it worth the wait? We're going to be talking about The Incredibles 2.
We will. Also, a new album from an Aussie, I guess you'd call them a soul funk band with a hint of Motown in there. They're called The Bamboos. This is their 8th album about to be released this week. I'll be chatting to the band leader, the guitarist, the songwriter, and he's an Auckland-born guy. His name is Lance Ferguson.
Now, we've got the release of another sequel this week. This time it's a very, very different end of the spectrum.
Yes, it is.
It is. Sicario has a sequel now. It's called, depending on which territory you're in, it's either Day of the Soldado or simply Soldado. And so, given that it's a crime movie, I'm going to ask Simon, what crimes are marketers guilty of when they undersell or missell a film?
Yeah, both, I think, in this case. But yeah, and we've got some other thoughts on other films to discuss as well. Now, to remember, just a point of for you to remember that if you do want to catch this podcast again, or read our reviews, or check out our concert photos, or our listings of what shows are coming up, you just need to head to our webpage, cravepodcast.com. That's cravepodcast.com.
That's cravepodcast.com. I think we need to really hammer this home.
We do.
We're going to get this into the nation's consciousnesses.
If it's not already.
Oh, I don't assume it is. In the meantime, The Incredibles 2. Now, like its predecessor, like we said, 14 whole years ago. I mean, seriously, it's a long time between the films. It's written and it's directed by Brad Bird. And he's clearly decided not to rush out a sequel. Good for him, to be fair. Especially when you consider what enormous success, commercially and critically. It was incredible how successful it was. See what I did there? Yeah. Professional. Professional comedy gold this is. But you have to respect him, don't you, for not just like pandering to the market. He could have banged out a sequel. I mean, those things take a couple of years, I realise. Yeah. But he could have tossed something off. And he didn't. And he's clearly waited until he thought that he had something that was ready to go to market. And Simon, did you pick up on the amount of hedging that I put in that last remark?
I'm getting a bit of a hint of a message there. Well, look, I actually was a good story. I did enjoy the film, mostly. I had a few questions in the back of my mind bubbling away as I watched it. I've only just seen it today. It's a movie, it's an animated movie, it's about a superhero family, and ostensibly it's pitched at kids, isn't it, Steve?
But you would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of these films at first glance, a kid's movie, I'll speak English eventually, you realise when you're an adult watching it that there are lots of messages and humour there that for the older folk as well. In this case, I wasn't so sure, and I didn't have a young person with me this time, my grandson I didn't bring along, whether he would have enjoyed it. There is some action and there is some humour, but a lot of it felt a little heavier, maybe a little darker and a little more adult in some ways than its predecessor. And there's a lot of messages about, well, parenting and gender stereotyping. I mean, I did like it, but it was a meaty film. What was your take on it, Steve?
Well, to really sort of lay into it, I intend to a little bit. I think we need to look at the plot, or should I say the plots, because one of my problems with it was I thought it was very, very disjointed. You got two almost completely separate stories being spun out. We're in a world now where superheroes are illegal to. You can be a superhero, but you can't do superhero things.
Yes.
And so the Incredibles are having to live an everyday life, and they're chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Incredible, Ellen, also Elastigirl, is enticed back into action with the promise that superheroes will be rehabilitated somehow. So she goes off and superheroes, leaving Mr. Incredible at home. And so we've got the message there of parenting. It's hard, fellas, have just realised that thing that women have been doing for how long now is actually kind of tough. And that plays out not just as a quick gag, but as an entire thread that runs through the film. Which then leaves, because you've then got the other thing of why he's on his own, of Elastigirl got off doing her bit, as a completely separate storyline. And so it felt very, very unfocused, very... What's the word I'm looking for? It was all over the place. It didn't flow for me. It was a bit of a mess. And when it was focusing on the family stuff, it was kind of funny. And there was a lot of humour in it. When Elastigirl was off Elastigirling, I think you were saying before, it was dark.
Well, that's interesting. I'll take... it'd be boring if we agreed with each other all the time, Steve. I didn't mind the two storylines that you've identified, and you're right, they didn't really intersect at all. They were quite separately played out. But I was kind of thinking, well, maybe that's a bit of a point from the writer about so many stories that we've seen in the past where the men get to have all the action and the fun and go off and the women are left behind to do other domestic duties. And I kind of took that to be a ploy that was done on purpose to make this overall commentary that was being made about gender stereotyping. So I personally didn't mind that so much, but I agree with you that there was a very strong contrast between the at times lighthearted, warm fuzzies around the family stuff, and then the darker, heavier material with Elastigirl doing her thing. And just as a quick sidebar, odd that in a film that's being released at a time of increased awareness of women's roles and of them being able to share the spotlight and equal pay and everything else, it's still Elastigirl.
Yeah,
I kind of think you would have updated that name somehow. She's a middle-aged mum, and they're still calling her Elastigirl.
Well, what would you call it? Elasto lady? I mean,
I don't know. Elasto woman? I don't know.
Elasto.
Do you have to have a gender-specific tag at the end of it?
I think possibly the problem is that they painted themselves into a corner 14 years ago in those less enlightened times, and they were stuck. They were stuck with it. So we end up with a film where, like we say, one particular storyline. Well, let's focus on the Elastigirl bit for a second.
Yes,
is a little bit heavy. There's genuine peril.
Yes.
There's very, very intense superhero sequences that, I mean, given that this is clearly aimed as a younger audience, it's rated PG, but it's clearly aimed at the littlies to a certain extent, it was fairly intense.
Yeah, there's one scene I particularly thought really would have... I thought, man, who are they pitching this at? There's a scene where Elastigirl is tracking a signal to find out where the bad guy is.
Yes.
And she's leaping and swinging through rooftops. And all the while, you're hearing a voiceover of the bad guy talking on the TV.
Yes.
And he's talking about media entrapment and mind control and the tyranny of the media in the modern world and how the screens rule our lives. And it was really quite a... heavy's a good word for it, speech. And I thought, wow, that's not going to appeal to a 7, 8, or 9-year-old, and they're not probably even going to be listening to it. But no. So that was, it did feel a bit like Brad Bird was cramming a lot in.
Yes,
and
it
wasn't as light as its predecessor, and it didn't quite have the breath of fresh air about it that the first one did. I still think it was a good film, but it had a different character to it, which may not make it as immediately appealing and accessible to a wider audience, I suspect.
No, I think that's a pretty fair synopsis, to be honest.
Yeah. But there's some good actors in it, Steve.
Oh, the cast is outstanding. I mean, Holly Hunter is just regressing to her Texas roots. So badly. She, every single S she says is simulated so badly. She overdoes that just a little bit.
Yes. Okay. But Bob Odenkirk is in it. Better Call Saul, that actor. Yep. He's in it. He plays a key character, one of the, sort of the people who believes he can save the soul of superheroes and get them back into the mainstream.
Yeah, we've got Isabella Rossellini, basically a cameo.
Yeah.
And let's not forget the single biggest name of all.
All right, go on.
You didn't recognise Samuel L. Jackson's voice?
Oh, yes. Sorry, yes. He's a returning cast member. Yes, yes.
I was going to say, if you hadn't recognised him, you could no longer be a film reviewer. No, that would have been worrying.
That's a given. Yes,
that
would have been
very disconcerting and disappointing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, some great talent. And you know, the acting is outstanding, as you'd expect.
I mean, and I think I would say this, that the characterization that they put into the animated characters and their faces is good. I mean, I think you really feel like you've got to know who these people are quite well. And I think the way that they direct and render the action sequences is pretty damn good. I mean, I got to the point, especially later on, where I almost forgot I was watching an animated film, and it felt like the action sequences were happening in real life, you know, and there was a genuine thrilling aspect of them to me anyway. I thought they were good.
Well, this is Pixar, let's face it. They know what they're about.
Yep. It's true.
Now, before we let go of this, there is one little thing we have to mention, speaking of Pixar. They always incorporate a little short, a little 10-minute short at the start of every film. And obviously The Incredibles 2, no exception. Now, Simon, you saw Bao as well, didn't you?
Bao,
the short film, the short feature at the start of it.
Oh yes, sorry, yes, I did, by Domi Shi, I think was the name of the creator of the film.
Yes,
I put down in my notebook short dumpling film.
Yes.
When it was, I thought it was wonderful. Just beautifully put together, a sweet richness to it, and. Yeah, a little family story, a 10-minute family story about a Chinese family where a young one has gone off and how the mum is left to mourn the departure of the son and what she does to kind of bring him back home, I guess. Would that be a reasonable way of putting it?
And I know where you're going with that, and that does kind of make sense, yes. I thought it was absolutely lovely.
It was. It was really good. Very good. And less is more sometimes, Steve.
Yes.
Because The Incredibles 2 was a bit long.
A little bit overblown. But this was an 8-minute silent short, and it was glorious.
Yeah, really good. Really good. Don't miss it. Don't turn up late if you're going to go see this film.
Absolutely.
So I think we're kind of in a bit of a... We're not on this quite the same page on this, but that's okay. I think it's worthwhile, and you... flawed a bit, and I think you're kind of the other way.
It's I can't wholeheartedly recommend it. It's fair, but it's not brilliant.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. That's all right. We can still be friends.
Absolutely. I would hope so. Anyway.
Right. Good. Now where are we? Movies. What about
some music?
Yes. Yes, yes, indeed.
So what do we know about music recently? I know, how about, could you tell me about an Australian band with a Kiwi frontman?
I could. The band is called The Bamboos, and the Kiwi frontman is a guy called Lance Ferguson. Now, I think I'd heard that name before, but I wasn't particularly familiar with them. But they've actually been around for a good decade, more actually. They're about to release their 8th studio album. So that's a pretty decent CV. This is a band based in Melbourne. The Bamboos, I think you'd describe them as a soul funk band, a bit of Motown to them, a very sultry soul lead singer. Lots of brass, you know, kind of Smokey Robinson meets Earth, Wind and Fire meets Aretha Franklin. I don't know, something along those lines.
That's a meeting I would like to be part of.
Yes. The new album, as I say, to be released this week is called Nighttime People. I've had a bit of a preview. I thought it was very good. And it has a particularly interesting final song, which is actually featured 3 times on the album with three different sets of lyrics from three different lead vocalists.
What a bizarre approach.
Yeah, same song, I mean, same music, but as I say, different vocalists, different lyrics. It does deal with an important topic, which a topic which these days, thankfully, is more openly talked about than it has been in the past. So rather than me prattle on, let's get to the interview. I spoke to Lance Ferguson just not that long ago. Here's what he had to say about it.
Thanks very much for talking to me, Lance.
Oh, thanks for taking the time. It's my pleasure.
Great. Well, look, I'm here to talk to you about this new album of the Bamboos called Nighttime People. And this might be a little odd, but I wouldn't mind beginning by talking about the last track, Lance, which is really interesting. It's called Broken, and you've got three different versions of it's the same music, isn't it? But with three different vocalists and three different sets of lyrics. Can you tell me about the idea behind that?
Yeah, so there definitely was an idea behind this. I mean, going back to the inception, I mean, some of my favorite music, from artists like, I guess, people like Curtis Mayfield and Marvin Gaye, for instance, off the top of my head, you know, music that was amazing, music that's steeped in some great kind of social messages and social awareness. And I, you know, there've been a couple of Bamboo songs with themes like that over the, you know, the eight albums we've done. But the message behind this track is really all around raising awareness around mental illness and emotional well-being, I guess, also you could put in there. And, you know, the message behind it is that it's okay for us to ask for help. It's okay for any of us to ask for help. And it's actually a sign of strength, I feel, and something that should be applauded, really. So this is a message that I feel very passionate about. I mean, we all, I think every single person I know, whether it's them, whether it's someone in their family, someone in their circle of friends, or someone they love, has been affected by this in some way, whether it's anxiety, depression, PTSD, there's a whole bunch of personality disorders, I guess, that come under this umbrella. But yeah, we really wanted to get this message out that it's okay to ask for help, that there's a lot of people out there who want to help you. And we thought, what's a great way to kind of, I guess, shout this message out in a global way. And the idea came up to feature three different MCs or rappers on this song called Broken, and you know, each of them bringing their own personal and what ended up being, you know, highly I guess raw and emotional and personal stories to the song, and sort of with the loose theme of I guess resilience around these topics I've been talking about. But yeah, we had Jay Live, a rapper from the US who I'm a massive fan of, Earthboy, who's a local legend in the Australian hip-hop scene, and TZ out of Berlin in Germany, who's a rapper but also an amazing songwriter and singer as well. And each of these artists really kind of stepped up and I think really came forth with some amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's I've managed to find on YouTube, Lance, a couple of videos for at least two of the three artists. You can Jay Live and Earthboy, and I think it's really interesting videos where you can read the lyrics as they're working their way through the song. I think Teezy's version is in the German language. Is there a translation available? In a way, you almost don't need it because there's such a lot of passion in the way he sings it. You almost don't need to know. that almost tells you all you need to know in a way, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, I don't have the translation of that one, but because he sings as well, I think that even though there's a slight disconnect with the language barrier, for me, that's actually one of my favorites, because his voice is so amazing for one thing, but you can just, you know, feel the emotion just dripping out of that one almost. It's a wild version. But you know, we decided to do the lyric videos just to really to get literally, you know, get those words into people's ears and faces and really spell out the stories. Earthboy's one is centered around, I guess, themes of toxic masculinity how people can go wrong and in that journey, and from a child with the wrong influences. And then J Live's got his whole amazing one just about almost a redemptive story of going, you know, through, I guess, sort of almost a depressive episode and coming out the other side. So, yeah, I think, you know, specifically around this thing, if you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. And I feel like these artists really did open themselves up. And, you know, that was really, it's almost a relief, because, you don't know what's going to come back when you go out with these things. In terms of the collaboration, I just think it really struck a chord with these particular artists, which was amazing.
Yeah, so it wasn't a hard job to convince them to join the project.
No, look, if I'm honest, in terms of the list of US rappers I had, you know, there were several of them on there, but J Live was just so enthusiastic about the concept and the idea, and also I absolutely love his sound and his work and his flow, and so he was just really, really into it, and I think his enthusiasm for it just, you know, it made it a no-brainer, really.
Yeah.
To choose him.
Other thing about Broken, the music, you know, you've got that the bold, brassy, funky, uplifting music in many ways, side by side with lyrics which are telling a different sort of story. It's a very interesting juxtaposition that you've come up with there. What was the thinking behind that? I mean, the music is almost, maybe it's, is it giving you some hope? Is that kind of what the music's doing in that song?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's almost a sort of a gospel element to it that I was trying to bring in as well. I mean, I think the feeling I wanted, especially at that end when the Kylie's almost sort of gospel like choir thing comes in right at the end, I did want it to end on a feeling of hope. I think the word hope is that you raised is, you know, it's key to this, and you know, although the some of the stories here touch on some, you know, dark places, I think at the end, you know, and the message is that there definitely is hope, and there's hope for any of us and all of us, you know, no matter what's going on. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion in this area, especially around actually people in the music industry and artists. There's a support network called Support Act, which started in Australia, which is, you know, doing things for artists. And a journalist I spoke to earlier had told me that just in the last little while, three New Zealand musicians had taken their own lives, which was really sad to hear. So I think, you know, there definitely is, you know, a lot of people have been talking about this, but I think we do need to keep talking about it and just keep raising as much awareness as we can.
Yeah. Oh, I really hope that single is successful. And with those artists that you've got, you know, you've got a great chance to get a really international audience for the song, because you've got an American, a German artist, and an Australian, of course, and your own band, which is very well known now. So I hope that goes really, really well. What about can you tell me, Lance, the album as a whole, looking at, would you say, for people who are not so familiar with the Bamboos and have heard the band described as a sort of funk soul band, and you're still, that brass and is still there, is this, how does this feel to you in terms of a progression from previous albums?
Well, you know, the thing is as much as we've been touching on the deep, you know, and important aspects around that song Broken, I mean, the major sort of theme of the Bamboos has been that we're kind of, I guess, for want of a better term, a party band, and we definitely, and especially in our live show, we aim to come and, you know, make people dance. That's always been our intention, and I think there is, you know, infinite beauty in that intention. It's something that's important to me, is to make people have a good time through music. And I feel like, you know, as much as we are a funk and soul band and are put in that genre box. We've always struggled against it a bit and tried to sort of, I don't know. Well, we're not sort of like a time capsule band or a purist band or trying to recreate some specific thing, you know, from a bygone age. I think popular music is such a young art form that really any of us are free to kind of pick bits out of it and recontextualize it into something that is definitely of the now. And I feel like that's been how I've treated the Bamboos in many ways as a band. Early on, we were definitely probably more influenced in a literal way by bands like the Meters and the JBs and those great American funk acts. But, you know, I think over, you know, then we went off on some tangents. I mean, we've done songs that have almost like a psychedelic rock influence. There's been things that have been much more sort of, you know, classic Motown pop influenced, and yeah. You know, the Fever and the Road album we did had a more of a sort of almost indie sort of influence coming through. So I think we've always sort of pushed against being in any one box. But I, the thing I like about this latest album we've done is it sort of comes full circle a bit, for want of a better cliche. And I think it has got a lot of those funk and soul aspects that you know, our fans of our earlier stuff will really enjoy. But I think it's been hopefully encapsulated in some songwriting that's got a little more depth to it. And the production aesthetic, I think, you know, with a lot of blood, sweat and tears, I think it does definitely sound like something that is of the now, which was really important again to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. And in fact, having that song Broken really encapsulates that, doesn't it? Because you've got that sound that some people will associate with the soul, but a treatment of it that brings it right up to right now. So that's a very interesting way to bring it all together. Hey, just you mentioned the full circle idea, and I just wondered, I know in the past you've worked with a number of different vocalists, but on this album, apart from the last track, Broken, primarily it's Kylie, isn't it? Kylie Aldist. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, Kylie's been in the band and actually been our lead singer since 2006. But I think, you know, it's my fault. I've kind of confused people a bit by involving guest vocalists on a bunch of songs, and some songs that ended up being singles and things like that. So Kylie has been incredibly patient with me over these years, and, you know, comes out and sings these songs live that other people recorded, and you know, a lot of the time smashes them out of the park with her own version of them. And you know, but with this album, I was like, hang on, let's actually just shine a light on the incredible voice we have right here in the band. And you know, I've been championing Kylie's sound for many years. I produced her solo records, and I've known her for, you know, 2.5 decades now. We were in other bands together before the Bamboos. So we have a long history of making music. And I really just wanted to put the shine the light on everything I love about what she does. And you know, and also the other, you know, seemingly naive thing to say, but actually it's going to be really cool. We've made a record. We can actually go out and play the record for people, and it will sound like the record because it has the singer that was on the record. And after 8 albums in, we're only just getting to that point and realizing the innate and greatness of that concept.
Well, because, you know, when you do
a record with 6 different guest vocalists on it, and you come to do a concert or a show, you know trying to pull that together is impossible. So yeah, we're pulling it back to the to just the core band. And you know, obviously we've got the rappers on that one track, but I think, you know, this album is definitely the sound of it is Kylie's voice for sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you. I've enjoyed listening to the new album, Nighttime People. Hey Lance, I hope the album goes well, and I really really hope that we get to see you over in New Zealand at some point in the next year or so. Thanks for talking to us.
Oh, I'm going to make it happen, Simon.
So that's Lance Ferguson from the Bamboos out of Melbourne, but he's from Auckland originally. So if you could go, if you want to our website, cravepodcast.com.
That's cravepodcast.com.
Steve, you can catch the full interview with Lance there. Plus, I put a couple of links into A couple of songs from the new album, including one version of that song we were talking about in the interview, the song called Broken. So, check it out. Well worthwhile.
Sounds brilliant. Right, so that dealt with very nicely. Let's get back to the picture, shall we?
Shall.
Now, we got a lot going on, and there's a lot in the pictures these days. There's a lot on our home screens as well. So, yeah. I mean, let's face it, it's not even just pictures anymore, isn't it? The TV shows are taking over. So I guess, you know, one question that we have to ask is, how do you quality control? How do you filter? How do you decide from everything you've got to choose from? How do you pick a film to see?
How do you? Well, of course, listening to Steve and I is one incredibly important way of doing that.
But I don't think they're the ultimate decision maker, really, to be fair.
That's a given. But you, of course, you're going to be assailed by all sorts of marketing messages, trailers. They're inescapable, aren't they? It would help, you'd think, if the trailers and if the messages accurately portray the actual film you're going to see.
Now, I'm starting to get the sense, Simon, that possibly you weren't completely convinced that when you saw Soldado, the film you saw was the film that you'd been sold. Might I be right there?
You might. In this case, perhaps not quite so much on the trailer, but on the messaging around it, I thought was... it actually made me quite angry in a way, because... let me say, first of all, I really enjoyed the first film, Steve. I thought it was a top-notch thriller. It was brilliantly directed, and it really left an impression on me. So I was approached this film thinking, if I could, I would actually avoid watching a trailer, because I'd like the pleasure of sitting down and watching a film and seeing it for the first time in the actual cinema.
There's a lot to be said for that, isn't there? Yes.
There is, but it's not easy to avoid a trailer.
No, not at all.
But in this case, there were some marketing taglines for Sicario Day of the Soldado, which had me fearing the worst.
Now, I haven't seen the film, right? For my sins, I haven't... I mean, it's a shame to admit this. I haven't seen the first one. Even though you spoke very, very highly of it at the time.
Yes.
But I have to tell you, when I see marketing phrases like, some missions need a hitman, others need a soldier, that... I think no. In fact, I will pay not to see that film. And in fact, even worse than that, this time there are no rules. Seriously, that's a no for me right there. I'm thinking that hard pass.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was my reaction when I saw those lines. I thought, come on. What's worse, Steve, is that this time there are no rules. Sounds like it's been written by someone who didn't see the first film. The first film is a thriller set on the Mexico-Texas border, and it's full of covert CIA operatives going on foreign territory with no permission, murdering drug dealers. They recruit an assassin to murder another drug dealer and his wife and his children in cold blood.
Excellent.
So where are the rules there? To say this time there are no rules. Well, there weren't any rules the first time. So I just thought that was ridiculous. And it just made you think that, oh, here we go, another sort of mindless, I don't know, I don't mean to be disrespectful of the term, but some sort of like Steven Seagal or Arnold Schwarzenegger action flick. You know what I mean? Something that was just full of explosions and fist fights and not much else.
Yes, yes. Luckily,
this film was a good film. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that because you can go to our website. That's cravepodcast.com, by the way, to read my review of the actual film. But I just thought that those messages got my dander up, and I thought, yeah, you buggers, you could have spoiled it for so many people.
But, you know, this is, let's be fair, though. I mean, it might be an egregious example of it, but it's hardly the first time. I mean, we trot out countless examples of this. I mean, like, do you remember Suicide Squad a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
You might have tried to forget it, I realise.
Yes,
but I mean, that was basically a substandard, but it was a basic superhero knockabout thing. Mm. But it was promoted in the trailers as a riotous comedy, and it was anything but.
Yeah, you're right. The actual film was a bit, got a bit boring, actually, but it wasn't a lighthearted little romp, was it? It was trying hard to be quite a serious superhero film in many ways.
Yeah, it was very, very misleading. I mean, Red Sparrow from a couple of months ago similarly presented itself. All the trailers said it was going to be almost sort of James Bond level spy-ish. Gave no indication whatsoever of the depths of darkness it was going to plumb.
I agree with that. Yes, it was a really dark and violent film, which was quite a disturbing film to watch. Not an adventure film at all. I think it was
a very tough watch, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it makes you think that maybe the production companies which soak their money into these films, they see the end product and they think, this isn't quite what we wanted. It's a bit more serious, or maybe it's not going to quite capture the market as we thought. But never mind. We'll cut and edit a trailer in such a way.
Yes.
Give it a different feel, a different sensibility, and we'll still get the people through the door and pay their ticket price. In this age of social media, that's not going to work hardly ever now.
No, I mean, but then you get things like, for example, I mean, you saw Hereditary recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you can speak to this better than I can, but I know it was on some posters, it was being touted as this generation's Exorcist.
Yeah, that's true. And while it was scary, and there was an aspect of possession in the story. There's no white knight, someone coming to do an exorcism of some sort of demon creature. And it actually, it played out more like an Alfred Hitchcock psychological thriller for three quarters of the movie until right at the end, when the sort of the horror demonic aspect kicks in big time.
But, right.
Well into the second half of the film, I thought, that doesn't feel like an exorcist to me at all.
Right.
I think that was a mislead or a misdirect.
Yeah.
There's one other example I must mention, and ironically, it was a film that was written by the same guy who wrote Sicario.
Oh dear.
A guy called Taylor Sheridan, and he's written some good stuff. And I saw a film, not at the cinema, and the reason I didn't see it at the cinema was because I saw the posters, which looked like a bulk standard thriller set in the North American winter. It had a couple of reasonably well-known actors. They've been recently in the Avengers films, Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen, and they were in this film called Wind River. And the promotions went along the lines like, danger comes with the territory.
Right.
And this is the land of you're on your own. And it just and the posters had the two lead actors, that were full face in the posters. So that was the predominant image. And I thought, but I'm not going to hurry out to see that. By chance, I just happened to see it a few months back just rented it as a DVD. And it was actually bloody good. And the reason it was good was that it had a completely different setting and context than it was promoted. It actually dealt with a very serious subject. It dealt with the abduction. It was not pleasant. The abduction, the rape, the murder of young indigenous women in the US from reservations. And it did it with quite a bit of class, well-written, well-acted, quite chilling, with a really strong message right at the end of the film. Nothing like the way it was promoted at all. I was thinking, if I was the writer of this film, I would have been so angry. I would have thought, what have you done to this piece of work I've labored over, and I've tried hard to, give it some serious social context, as well as providing a good thriller and mystery. I did not go to see that film because of the way it was promoted.
I think I picked up more than anything else in that, though, is the fact that you watched it on rented DVD.
Which it's not easy to do these days, by the way.
No. I mean, I know the Video Easy down here in Pukekohe has shuttered its doors recently. I wasn't aware people still rented DVDs.
Well, actually, I was in a very small town called Whangamata on the Coromandel Peninsula. I think it's a United store. That's still open, but you'd be struggling to find any at all these days. There's some supermarkets now, don't they, Steve? They have little booths when you go in where you can rent
the rental machines. Yes,
but they're not the sort of range that you would have got at a proper video store. So
no,
that's kind of, you're right. That's an interesting thing of what's happening to the market. Yes, we can access a lot online now.
That's how I get all my stuff these days, yeah.
Yeah. But if you want to do it following the rules, shall we say,
there's a lot of kosher ways of getting stuff online. It's not all pirate.
No. Oh, good.
Yeah. And I have to say, I'm impressed that Fongamatar is actually up to DVDs now. I would have thought it would be VHS out there, to be honest. So.
Right. Thank you, Steve. Yes, yes.
Sorry.
I think they have electricity and running water even.
What, even at weekends?
Oh, yes.
Brilliant. I just have to come over and visit sometime then.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, we're slightly digressing, but you get the point. And I'd be interesting, Steve, there must, as you say, must be countless examples of other films which have been missold. And if anyone wants to give us, Steve and I, a few examples, we'd be very pleased to hear from you.
Absolutely. Mm. We're always delighted to hear anyone's thoughts on what we have to say. Don't forget, podcast@cravepodcast.com is a good way to get hold of us.
Yes. And just before we go on to wrap things up, are there, in fact, Steve, I didn't check with you before, but are there any shows, films coming up super soon that we should be mentioning before we go?
Glad you asked.
Good. Oh, well, I'm glad I asked too then.
There's one or two. Here's one of my favourite bands, James.
Now, I don't know much about James. I've certainly heard that name. Tell me a little bit about them, please.
Now, James were maybe not the absolute biggest names of the Manchester movement of the late 80s, early 90s, but they were certainly there or thereabouts. Okay. They had a very, very big hit in the late 80s called Sit Down. And they really became famous, in particular internationally, with a song called Laid that appeared on one of the American Pie soundtrack albums.
Oh.
And so, I mean, that places them firmly in 80s, 90s territory. But they're still going, and they're not just doing greatest hits tours and all the rest. They're still making new music. They were at the Power Station a couple of years ago, and they were outstanding.
Okay.
I had the good fortune to talk to their singer, Tim Booth, shortly before the show. And you can, again, if you go to cravepodcast.com, you'll find my interview with Tim Booth there. And they're coming back to the Power Station Sunday, November the 11th.
Okay.
And then the following night, the Bedford Marquee in Christchurch, they increasingly plough their own very individual furrow. They have some fantastic music, very distinctive sound to them. I would recommend them very strongly.
Hey, and what's this? Okay, and what's this about? Not the usual sort of thing we see on our concert listing. What's this about the cast of Twin Peaks coming to New Zealand?
Now, if you've read the announcement at cravepodcast.com, Simon, you know absolutely as much as I do.
Okay.
Five of the stars of Twin Peaks, Cheryl Lee, Kimmy Robertson, Michael Horse, Al Strobel, and Dana Ashbrook, but not, you will notice,
I was going to say Kyle McLaughlin, but it's not right, is it?
No, I think it is, yeah.
It is right. That is it. That's the guy. Yeah.
But the reason you can't remember is because his name's not on the list.
No.
Exactly, yes. You could read a lot into that, couldn't you?
David Lynch didn't come either.
No, but the executive producer, Sabrina S. Sutherland, will be in Auckland and Christchurch for an exclusive and unique Conversation with the Stars evening.
Okay.
It's a hard sell, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an odd thing to bring around the world in a way. It's kind of it's the sort of thing you'd associate with some sort of a, you know, one of those conventions, you know, where you go and get autographs from...
Oh, the comic cons and that kind of thing.
Like the Armageddon type things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But if this is what's going to float your boat...
Well...
I think you might be washing your hair this night, Simon.
Thank you, yes.
Auckland, Wednesday, August the 22nd at the ASB Theatre. Christchurch, Thursday the 23rd at the Isaac Theatre. If anyone... Go tell us what you make of it.
Yeah.
A little bit unconventional.
Yes. And there was I'll just mention quickly a film that's actually just opened on, we're recording this on a Thursday, so it's open today in most of the cinemas around New Zealand. Yet another Marvel film has just opened. This is Ant-Man and the Wasp, which follows on two massive, they've been commercially successful anyway, but this year, Steve, Black Panther was scored well over $1 billion, and I think became the most successful Marvel film in the United States, whereas the second film, Avengers Infinity War, has passed the $2 billion mark around the world.
Yes.
And so is in that sort of stratosphere. Now this is, I think, regarded as a sort of a smaller, excuse the pun, because it deals with superheroes can shrink to the size of an ant film. But the first one was almost a comedy, and it had Paul Rudd, who's kind of very much a comic actor, I think would be fair to say. I'm picking this is going to be similar, and probably is a very diverting night out, I suspect.
I would imagine. So, in fact, you and I really, instead of doing this, ought to be there, to be honest. But, you know,
yeah, what can we talk? We're dedicated. That's
absolutely. A couple more shows to tell you about very, very quickly.
Okay.
Passenger, who I've grown quite fond of over the years. He's an acquired taste in my mind, but if you're hoping to acquire the taste, go to the Power Station in Auckland on the 13th of November. Okay. We've got 660, Australian pop band,
okay,
who will be the first New Zealand band ever to headline at Western Spring Stadium.
Oh, okay. This is the new reinvented Western Spring Stadium. Okay, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to have Drax Project, Sons of Zion, opening for them.
Okay, well, Drax Project, we've seen a bit of them this year on, so they're well worth, they opened for everybody's favourite redhead from England, who performs solo. My mind's
and
gone.
You can't think of the name Ed Sheeran, can you?
Ed Sheeran.
That's the one. Okay, so that's Western Spring Stadium, Saturday the 23rd of February.
Uh-huh.
And finally, this is the one that I know you've been looking forward to, Simon.
Oh, thank you. Yes,
I know you've been excited. Friday the 21st of September at Spark Arena in Auckland, it's Cher.
Yes. I'm scared to ask how old she might be. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't worry about those sort of things.
It depends. Which bit of her?
Yeah. Where to begin? you kind of just wonder, we shouldn't be ageist, should we? But you do wonder about, you know, vocal strength and stamina and fitness and, you know, ability to carry a show. But she certainly has longevity, that's for sure. Blimey.
I think she's pickled in aspic, really, most of the time. I mean, the poster says an American icon performing her greatest hits. I think it's safe to say she's not got new material to promote.
No.
But yeah, it will be interesting to go along and just see what she's got left.
I agree. I think there'll be a huge curiosity factor, and I think she'd probably pack it out, I suspect.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. I am going to go, if we end up going, I will go with a very open mind and be very interested to see what she does have left in the tank, so to speak.
Yes, that's right. So, good stuff. Thank you. So, a lot to look forward to in the next month or two or three. In the meantime, as we said, very pleased to hear from you. Drop us a line. You can email us on, what was it again? Oh, yeah, podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at the creatively selected handle Crave Podcast.
How did you come up with that? I don't know.
Took me hours.
Ew. I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.
Fantastic.
Good. Very good.